Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
There have been 96 confirmed deaths, 60 adults, and 36 children. The number of missing remains at 161.
In central Texas, the search for the dead continues a week after the devastating flood of July 4th killed 96 people in Kerr County, 121 overall. And the death toll keeps rising. What can we learn from this tragedy to prevent the next as President Trump goes to the area today? We'll speak with Monica Medina, former top official at NOAA. That's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We look at the role of climate change and the Trump administration's dismantling of critical agencies of rescue and research. Then a federal judge issues a nationwide injunction against President Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship. The ruling came in response to a nationwide class action lawsuit filed by the ACLU and other groups. We'll speak with the ACLU's legal aunt. Then to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk.
I lived in New York during COVID. I was every day grateful for the migrant workers that kept the city going. I was actually at some stage wondering if they didn't work, what would happen to all of us? We might actually starve.
We'll speak with the High Commissioner about President Trump's targeting of migrants and the changing role of the U.S. and the world under Trump. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, the UN Human Rights Office said it's documented the killing of nearly 800 Palestinians seeking aid by Israeli forces. Most of those have been at aid points run by the U.S., an Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, GHF. The GHF announced it'll now only operate one aid distribution site in Rafah after shuttering hundreds of others across the strip, many of them UN aid sites, forcing Palestinians in desperate need of aid to move south. Aid groups say over 2 million Palestinians are now crammed into less than 15% of the Gaza Strip's total area. On Thursday, an Israeli attack on Deir al-Balah killed at least 16 Palestinians, including at least 8 children, who'd gathered outside the Al-Tiyada clinic where they were waiting to receive nutritional supplements. The bodies of young children were seen lying on the street as medics scrambled to treat the wounded.
Children and women were thrown to the ground. They were waiting for the place to open so they could receive nutritional supplements. You know that the crossings are closed and there's no food or drink. People are forced to wait here in order to get nutritional supplements for their children.
This comes as the UN confirmed its first very limited fuel delivery into Gaza in at least 130 days. The UN says the amount allowed in covered less than one day of Gaza's fuel needs. Hospitals remain in critical condition. This is pediatrician Ziad Al-Masri of Al-Halu Hospital.
There are 3 or 4 newborn babies in one incubator. It is designed to accommodate one child, one premature baby. Our situation is like a disaster. The cramming of children leads to the spread of illness and inability to deal with them, and therefore leads to a direct danger to them.
President Trump Thursday threatened to impose a 35% tariff on Canada starting August 1st, as well as 15% and 20% tariffs on other nations. As with other tariff threats he issued this week, Trump said the increased levy would be subject to negotiations. Trump accused Canada again of allowing fentanyl to cross the border into the U.S., a claim which has been discredited. Earlier this year, Trump imposed a 50% tariff on Canadian steel and aluminum and a 25% tariff on car parts. Separately, Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva vowed Thursday to retaliate in kind if President Trump goes ahead with a threatened 50% tariff on his country.
There's no doubt that first we'll try to negotiate, but if there's no negotiation, the reciprocity law will put us into practice. If he charges us 50%, we'll charge him 50%.
President Trump has threatened the 50% tariff on Brazil unless Brazil drops charges against the former president and Trump ally, Bolsonaro. In May, the U.S. Court of International Trade blocked much of Trump's global tariffs agenda, ruling he exceeded his authority by invoking emergency powers. Trump is currently appealing that case. Another federal judge has blocked the Trump administration's effort to terminate birthright citizenship by approving a class action lawsuit. The move allows plaintiffs to challenge Trump's executive order after the Supreme Court moved last month to restrict nationwide injunctions, the legal mechanism that's been used to in previous efforts to block Trump's unconstitutional targeting of the longstanding immigration policy. Judge Joseph LaPlante, a George W. Bush appointee, said Trump's policy would lead to irreparable harm. The class action lawsuit represents babies born in the U.S. to non-citizen parents on and after February 20th. We'll have more on this and other immigration cases later in the broadcast with the ACLU's Lee Learned. In California, dozens of farm workers were detained as border agents tear-gassed and clashed with dozens of protesters who intervened during a raid Thursday in Camarillo. This is a protester.
These guys showed up all tough. Cowards, and they've already tried to push us out, but there's more of us here now than there were before. At the end of the day, they're the ones coming from over there. They're not from here. Farmers who work here take more of a beating than anyone else. They're not the ones who deserve this f***ing treatment.
The standoff lasted into the night, with federal agents blocking roads with military-style vehicles and lining up dozens of handcuffed people against a wall who'd been arrested at agricultural fields. The agents said they were executing a warrant at a cannabis farm that also grows tomatoes and cucumbers. The farm workers arrested were taken away on buses. The Committee to Protect Journalists has called for the release of a prominent Spanish-language journalist in Georgia who's facing possible deportation after being arrested while covering No Kings protests in June. Mario Guevara is originally from El Salvador. He was live streaming the demonstration when he was taken into custody. The Trump administration's ignoring a court ruling that ordered Guevara be released on bail. He's lived in the United States for some 20 years and has built a large following for his reporting on anti-ICE protests. This all comes as the Trump administration's banned undocumented children in low-income families from receiving federal assistance from the Head Start program that provides federally funded educational, nutrition, and health care services. The National Head Start Association said in a statement, quote, Head Start programs strive to make every child feel welcome, safe, and supported, and reject the characterization of any child as illegal. The U.S. State Department announced plans to slash its domestic personnel by 15% after the Supreme Court gave Trump the green light last week to gut federal agencies and carry out mass layoffs. Hundreds of State Department bureaus will also be merged or eliminated in the so-called restructuring. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has called again for the elimination of FEMA, that's the Federal Emergency Management Agency, accusing it of a slow response to the catastrophic floods in Texas. But FEMA officials say the agency's response was a direct result of Noem's own policy, which now requires that the Secretary of Homeland Security, that's Noem herself, sign off on any work costing more than $100,000 before deploying personnel, something which she apparently failed to do promptly. Noem denied the claims. This comes as the death toll has risen to at least 121, 1 week after the historic flash floods devastated Texas. There are still over 160 people unaccounted for. Among the rescue workers helping in the recovery effort are several teams of volunteers from Mexico, including a group of firefighters and the international rescue crew Topaz Azteca. This is the group's founder, Hector Mendez.
It's called empathy. When you see that people are suffering and you can help them, you have to go do the work. We're all the same people. We're one family. So we're going to be here until they tell us to leave.
Texas Democrats have blasted Texas Governor Greg Abbott for trying to orchestrate what they call a power grab in the wake of the flooding disaster, by adding a Republican redistricting measure to an upcoming special legislative session. Texas voting map is already heavily gerrymandered in favor of Republicans. A new United Nations report warns over 4 million people could die of HIV-related deaths over the next 4 years as a result of U.S. cuts to AIDS funding. Winnie Byanyima, executive director of UNAIDS, called on other countries to step up their financial commitments to the most affected countries, saying, quote, "This is not just a funding gap. It's a ticking time bomb," she said. USAID officially closed its doors last week, with the State Department purportedly absorbing its remaining workers and functions after President Trump and Elon Musk's Doge operation gutted the international aid agency. The repercussions have been felt around the world. In the Somali city of Baidoa, health clinics warn of a worsening vaccination and malnutrition crisis among children.
Many communities, many children, many families are very vulnerable following drought years over the last few years, the loss of livelihoods, the loss of livestock, and they're in desperate need. And at the same time that they face desperate needs with drought, with climate change impacts, they're, of course, suffering now the impact of aid cuts.
Mozi Malik is with Save the Children. As the U.S. cuts aid to Somalia, U.S. warplanes carried out more airstrikes in Somalia last week. It was the 49th U.S. airstrike on Somalia since President Trump returned to office, according to the group New America. Human rights defenders are sounding the alarm as Greece moves to suspend the processing of asylum applications of people arriving from North Africa for at least 3 months. Greece's migration minister said anyone violating the policy would face a choice between jail or being immediately expelled. The International Rescue Committee said, quote, "Seeking refuge is a human right. Preventing people from doing so is both illegal and inhumane," unquote. It's not unusual for Greek Coast Guard to rescue hundreds of asylum seekers a day in the Mediterranean Sea. The Greek government's move to restrict rights for the growing immigrant population and to criminalize activists who help refugees. Israeli officials say they believe some of Iran's underground stockpile of enriched uranium survived Israeli and U.S. bombing last month, reflecting a similar assessment issued by U.S. intelligence that the bombing campaign did not destroy Iran's enriched uranium stores. In other news from Iran, a prominent human rights lawyer reports some 100 transgender prisoners went missing and are presumed dead after Israel bombed Tehran's notorious Evin prison on June 23rd as part of its 12-day war on Iran. Israel's strikes also hit Evin's hospital ward. Evin prison is well known for holding political prisoners and dissidents, as well as for torture and executions. Following Israel's assault, prisoners have been transferred elsewhere, but their loved ones warn conditions remain dire. Here in New York, students and staff at City University are demanding school administrators rehire 4 faculty members who've been let go for their pro-Palestinian advocacy. They're also demanding CUNY reverse its year-long suspension of student organizer Hadika Arzu Malik. This comes as Trump officials acknowledge they use the anti-Palestinian doxing website Canary Mission to compile a list of student targets for deportation. The revelation came as part of testimony in the AAUP versus Rubio trial. To see our conversation about that trial in Boston, go to democracynow.org. In related news, Mahmoud Khalil has filed a $20 million lawsuit against the Trump administration over his arrest, ICE detention, and defamation. Khalil also said he'd accept an official apology in lieu of the millions of dollars in damages. Elon Musk announced Thursday his AI chatbot Grok will be available in Tesla vehicles next week amidst widespread fallout over Grok's Mecha Hitler scandal. On Tuesday this week, Grok started unleashing anti-Semitic rants and calling itself Mecha Hitler on Musk's social media platform X. Among other things, Grok told users it observed, quote, radical leftists with Ashkenazi surnames pushing anti-white hate, unquote. Ex-CEO Linda Yaccarino resigned on Wednesday. In related news, an AI-generated voice impersonator contacted multiple officials via Signal, posing as Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Those targeted include foreign ministers, a U.S. governor, and a Congress member. And in labor news, video game voice and motion capture actors signed a new contract this week with gaming studios after agreeing on AI protections and fair compensation. They've been on strike for nearly a year. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump will be visiting Texas today, a week after the devastating flash floods swept through the hill country of central Texas, taking so many lives. The banks of the Guadalupe River rose more than 23 feet in under an hour. The death toll statewide has reached 121 and counting. Kerrville police officer Jonathan Lamb gave an update yesterday for Kerr County, which was hardest hit.
As of 8 a.m. this morning, there have been 96 confirmed deaths, 60 adults, and 36 children. The number of missing remains at 161, and there remain five campers and one counselor from Camp Mystic among the missing.
Many questions have been raised about whether this extreme event could have been less deadly and how communities could have been more prepared from local to state and federal levels. Texas Governor Greg Abbott scolded a reporter who asked him who's to blame for the deadly flood disaster.
You ask, I'm going to use your words. Who's to blame? Know this. That's the word choice of losers. Every football team makes mistakes. The losing teams are the ones that try to point out who's to blame. The championship teams are the ones that say, don't worry about it, man. We got this. We're going to make sure that we go score again, then we're going to win this game. The way winners talk is not to point fingers. They talk about solutions.
Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has called again for the elimination of FEMA. That's the Federal Emergency Management Agency, accusing it of a slow response. But FEMA officials say the agency's response was a result of Noem's own policy, which requires her, the Secretary of Homeland Security, to sign off on any work costing more than $100,000 before deploying personnel, something which she apparently failed to do promptly. On Sunday, after the Friday of the flash floods beginning, she was sending out Instagram photos of herself, asking her viewers to choose which photograph should be her official photograph of her on horseback. Noem is denying the claims that she got in the way of FEMA. FEMA's already lost 20% of its permanent staff since the start of the year as a result of DOGE reduction efforts. Meanwhile, acting FEMA head David Richardson is nowhere to be found. He's yet to visit Texas. Richardson made headlines just last month for reportedly telling FEMA staff he didn't know the U.S. has a hurricane season. President Trump has said he wants to eliminate FEMA. He was asked by a reporter Sunday if his cuts may have had impact.
Are you investigating whether some of the cuts to the federal government left key vacancies at the National Weather Service or in the emergency coordination?
No, they did not.
They did. I'll tell you, if you look at that, what a situation that all is. And that was really the Biden setup. That was not our setup. But I wouldn't blame Biden for it either. I would just say this is a 100-year catastrophe, and it's just so horrible to watch.
Scientific research and programs related to weather and climate change have also come under attack by the Trump administration. The floods occurred on July 4th. That's the same day President Trump signed his budget into law, locking in further cuts. For more on the role of climate change and the Trump administration's dismantling of critical agencies and research, we're joined now by Monica Medina, former top official at NOAA. That's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, also co-host of the Scientista podcast. Monica, thanks so much for joining us. Why don't we start off by you responding to Greg Abbott, the Texas governor, saying only losers look at who's to blame. Can you talk about the whole structure of emergency response and then talk about the role of climate change?
Thank you so much, Amy, for having me on, and thank you for continuing to cover this story the way you have. And I want to start by saying my heart goes out to the families of the victims, to the people who lost their lives in this tragic event. It was entirely preventable. Many of the lost lives could have been saved if links in our disaster response chain hadn't been broken. And I will start by responding to the governor's comments, which I found incredibly callous. To compare this tragedy to a football game is really what trivializes it and what causes people to think thunderstorms and extreme weather isn't the threat to their lives that it is. And the same with the president. Their budget, their proposals, all the way back to before the election, we saw with Project 2025, this was what they planned to do. And they have followed through. They have cut crucial parts of the Weather Service. They are cutting research. They're cutting the data collection. They're cutting the satellites that give us the ability to be prepared for these storms. And what we know with climate change is that these storms are more rapidly intensifying and more severe. So at a moment when we need to up our game on disaster preparedness and on response, we are cutting the very links in the chain that keep people safe. And now it will be on individuals to take action in their own hands. And sometimes that can be even more disastrous because, as in this case, when people started finally to try to evacuate, they all tried to evacuate at once. And that caused traffic jams and people to get stuck in places where they were vulnerable. And again, the children on the banks of this river were never able to really protect themselves from this devastation. And a lot of people in that chain of support, that lifeline of response and preparation, a lot of those links in that chain were broken. And without having to think about who in particular was responsible, we can look at why it happened and what we can do to make sure it doesn't happen again.
So a lot of people don't understand what the National Weather Service is. It was under you when you were one of the top officials at NOAA. If you can explain how the National Weather Service has been cut, the kinds of people who are no longer, I mean, when talking about the gold mine, the reservoir of knowledge, what they did, and who is missing in those local offices because of these massive cuts.
In this particular case, the office was missing a hydrologist and a meteorologist in charge, a coordinator, the person whose very job it is to know who to call, where in the chain, if there might be a break in the chain, where to go down the chain, farther down, and make that phone call that could save lives. So crucial people were missing because of the cuts. One took a buyout. One position was never filled. So we know that those cuts are devastating, and more are on the way. You talked about earlier in your newscast the fact that the State Department is now preparing for mass layoffs. Those could happen in any agency. It could happen in FEMA. It could happen at NOAA, and they're planning for more cuts. So we are missing the people who can make the difference. AI isn't going to save us. The models aren't going to save us. The pieces of paper on which the forecasts are written aren't going to save us if we aren't making that person-to-person connection. It's that last mile where things seem to have really broken down in this particular case. The Weather Service made forecasts that were that gave people time to prepare, but the break came somewhere along that chain. And in fact, maybe we could have jumped the chain, connected some of those links, if we'd had more weather people in that local office. They are not bureaucrats sitting in Washington. That was something that the local congressman, Chip Roy, said, oh, we don't need more bureaucrats in Washington. These people in the local offices are community members. They live and work in these places all over the country. And if people think this was a freak accident and couldn't happen to them, they should think again. Pay attention to the weather. Pay attention to the warnings that come hours in advance. And I hope the president, when he's there today, will see the impact of the cuts and see how devastating these storms are and how every link in the chain is vital. And in fact, we need to strengthen that chain, not weaken it and break it.
Former NOAA Administrator Rick Spinrad said staffing cuts by the Trump administration may have contributed to the July 4th flood's tragic outcome. He was speaking on CNN.
I am convinced that the staff cuts that we saw were a contributing factor to the inability of the emergency managers to respond. The staffing was just fine, and the White House has concurred with this, to get the forecast out, to get the watches and warnings issued. But when you send a message, there's no guarantee it's being received, so someone needs to follow up, and that's the warning coordination meteorologist, a position that was vacant.
Your response to that, Monica Medina, a position that was vacant.
Agree 100% with Rick. This is exactly what I mean by skipping the chain. The person in that office knew, who used to work there, had been there for years, knew the people to call on the ground where this might have the greatest impact. And what we're missing is those extra helping hands. Yes, we can get the forecast out, but now we have to choose between getting the forecast out in a timely way or making those calls, taking in the data that we need. We know we're losing forecasters all over the country, and the weather architecture that we have, our weather forecasting system, depends on data being collected all over the country. Weather doesn't just happen in one place. It's systemic. And we need a weather service that's strong and ready for these powerful storms that can move and pop up quickly. We can't afford to have a skeleton crew. Yes, they had enough people to get out the forecasts, and they did, but they didn't have enough people to go that extra mile.
I wanted to ask you about the FEMA head. I mean, I think if you polled most people in this country, 99.99% would absolutely not know his name. David Richardson, we have seen him nowhere. Now, let's be clear. He replaced another Trump appointee who felt that FEMA should not be dismantled. So he was pushed out. And then you have Kristi Noem and this issue of her having to approve every $100,000 or more expenditure. Why that mattered in these critical days was that there is a FEMA rapid response team, but they didn't have the approval to move forward. The significance of this and Kristi Noem's role in actually blaming FEMA as they are dismantling it.
Yes, the president, Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, state officials, they all are now trying to run from this problem, but they are responsible for it. It is on them. The president calling it a Biden problem. That's absurd. The Biden FEMA administrator said she would have been on the ground and she would have pre-positioned assets to be able to respond more quickly in that disaster. This is a complete reversal of decades of policy by both Republican and Democratic administrations to be prepared, more and more prepared, for these kinds of events. And in fact, what they're doing is making people in those places more vulnerable. And it's not just this flood alley in Texas. It could be a fire. It could be a hurricane. It could be a flood in another part of the country, even in a city like San Diego or San Antonio. A month ago, had more than 10 people died in a flash flood like this. We have to be ready. The weather is more extreme because of climate.